Hello and welcome in to another episode of Podcast 63, Season 2, Episode 21. Now legally, this podcast, Season 2, can drink. So, even though...
After the game we had this weekend, I think we're going to need a few
minutes. Did at the airport bar, and I will tell you all about that. Sorry we missed last week. It's my bad. I was in Arizona, and I forgot the equipment to record. So that was what ended up happening. But I was able to relax for a little bit until the game started, and then I was incredibly stressed out. But we had two good results. We'll talk about that, and then we're going to go back to the week before and just kind of give quick little recaps, like what happened in our horrible loss, then what happened in our close win. So we got lots to talk about, games to talk about, players to talk about. Are you ready, Lou?
Born ready.
You heard it here. Born ready. All right. Enjoy, and don't forget, go Blazers.
He passes out to Hunter. Hunter shoots off the rim. Rouse gets it, scores. It's over. It's over. We won. We won the ball game. Viola won the ball game. Oh, we won 60-58.
All right, Lou. So the first game we have to talk about is the bad one, which I think is good because we can get it out of the way.
Okay.
So we played Indiana State.
Rip the Band-Aid off. Come on.
Yep. We played Indiana State in Terre Haute. Terre Haute. I don't know how you say
Terre-hoo.
It. Terre Haute. Terre Indiana State.
Well, they teared us apart.
They definitely. They teared us apart. That's a good one. We lost 68-39 in what is most definitely our worst loss of the season. I would say Coppin State's up there, but that's way earlier in the season. And this is horrible. There's no other way to put it. This is the worst performance of the team so far. No games, really, no stat lines even worth talking about. No one scored over 10 points. Cam did have 8 points, 5 rebounds, and 4 assists, but I think they ended up taking out most of the starters halfway through the second half. Just there's no use in even having them continue to run up and down the court for sake of injuries or, you know, just rest the guys. On the other side, they had 4 players in double figures. Tyreek Key had 18. He was 4-6 from 3. Jake LaVaria had 15 and 12. And then Williams and Bacote for them both had 10. How I remember the game going is the first like 10 minutes of the game or 8 minutes of the game, we were both scoring. We were both shooting well. I think Lucas had like 2 early threes. And we were keeping up with him. And I remember thinking to myself, well, this is not the game we want to play. Like, we can't, there's no way if we're just taking quick shots, letting up quick shots on the other end, not playing great defense, not boxing out, not creating turnovers and stopping them, then we're going to lose this game. And then sure enough, there was one, I know, like, Tate had a fast break and one, missed the free throw, and then from then on, I think they went on like a 19-2 run to close the half. Like something just embarrassing, like straight up embarrassing for the team, for Porter, for really anyone watching that game. It was horrible. Luckily, I was able to turn it off. I hope that everyone else was able to too, because no one wants to watch that. There's no reason to.
It was tough, and I think we really don't need to say much. So Tyreek Key was going off, and that was the one thing we couldn't hold him. And they went off that run to end the half, and they kept going. We couldn't catch up. We couldn't defend. And regardless of our offense, it was that we couldn't defend. We couldn't
get
a stop.
That was the weirdest thing for me.
I think that was the interesting thing is that, yes, we had a low-scoring offensive game, but we've had those games where we're not scoring, we're not great. But our defense has always kept us there. Mm-hmm. And there are times where, even when we took losses early in the season, it was because our offense was stagnant and it didn't produce. Mm-hmm. It wasn't because our defense gave up. It was because our offense. This game was the total opposite. Our defense wasn't even there. When you asked Tara who, I would like to know who showed up for the defensive side.
Nobody.
And, like, we can't put it all on Cam. You can't put it all on, like, I don't
know.
No,
it was a total team effort. Like,
coaching staff, I think players. We were even chatting to give context about it, how we got so frustrated even just watching our bench guys out there.
Yeah.
And it was more frustrating for me. You watch guys like Frank get burned by a freshman, and then the same freshman did the same exact move to Tom Welch.
Yeah.
And it was like the commentators were like, and he's a freshman. And then I was sat there and was like, Tom Walter's a freshman. Maybe he should know how to defend, but I don't know because no one could defend. So that's pretty much, it was a tough one to watch. It was very, very agonizing and just painful.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just the thing. It's that these games like Indiana State really hurt. And they hurt even more now, which we'll definitely get into, is because we're only one game away from you and I in conference record. And this is the game that is going to hurt more than anything, is games where we completely didn't show up, where it wasn't even a lack of, like, last-second shot heave. It was total lack of team showing up.
Yeah, this team played a good 8 minutes of the game, and that was it. And I think to touch on what you mentioned a little bit with the bench, too, is you would think, like, these guys who don't get the opportunity would come in and try to make the most of their opportunity. Someone like Pipkins, who has really seen his minutes diminish over the year. Tom Welch, who's always been fighting for minutes. Paxson Wojcik, who, same thing, has had his minutes diminish over the year. You think these guys are going to come in and really just, like, give it their all. And from what I saw and later read on the recaps, like, they didn't. They didn't give any... I don't ever want to question the fact that they didn't have any effort, but it was obvious that the effort wasn't where it has been this year. And I think another weird thing for me is that I tend to compare the teams like this year and last year, because I do think, like, skill wise they're similar, like they're not going to blow you out of the water. But last year's team, if you remember, had this problem where they would dominate, they'd show up and they'd dominate a team, and then the next game they'd go out and they'd put up 39 points against, what, like Missouri State, or I think they lost at Evansville last year. And I thought for the most part this team was more consistent, like that was their calling card, was like they weren't as offensively skilled as last year's team, but they played good defense and they were consistent, and this game broke that rule for me. And that's the thing that I'm most worried about, is I was hoping they were going to make a game out of it and show some fight, maybe lose by 8 or 6 rather than 30 or whatever it ended up being, 31. They didn't do that. So I don't know now if this team is consistent, if they're showing this big of a swing. I hope they prove me wrong. I hope that they continue this trend that they've now been on since this game of 3 in a row. And I hope that they can carry that into Arch Madness as well. No more hiccups like this, because it'll go downhill real quick.
Yeah, I think my last thought is that a game like this, if you reflect back in the conference play, and say we go and win the rest of the games in conference play, games like this, I don't think the SIU game or even the UNI game will be as annoying and as leave such a sour taste in guys' mouths.
Yeah.
Because it will be, what could we have done, and what they could have done is showed up. And I think, and I, again, I like your point, is like, we can't say they didn't show up.
Yeah.
Because we're not the ones out there playing. We're not the ones out there sweating. It was just really tough to watch, though, that really they just let Indiana State go.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the thing. And no one scored over 10 points. No one scored over 9 points. No one scored in double figures. It was a mixed effort, and that's what it was.
Also, to just kind of call attention to, we've been talking about the players a lot, to call attention to Porter. I don't think they called a timeout in that, like, 19-2 stretch. I could be wrong, but I'm almost positive. Or if they did, it was just one timeout. Like, that's such a huge run over such a big time that you need to get your stuff together, call a timeout, you know, try to run a play, or get guys in there that want to play and can play. And so we've been talking so much about the players, I think it's fair to call out Porter as well. Maybe a lapse in judgment. Maybe he thought his players were going to snap out of it, but they didn't. The reality was they didn't, and he messed up. He should have been more attentive and called more timeouts. Even if he did call one, he should have called another, because a 19-2 run is... That's the game. That's the game right there, and he didn't do anything to stop it. But we do have more fun things to talk about now. Lou, what are your last thoughts on the Indiana State game?
And just overall, just upsetting loss. It was a tough one to take. I think every team almost in the Valley has had a bad loss. You could say you and I's lost to SIU. Our loss to Indiana State, I think, is going to be up there with just a bad loss. But that's the Valley. Any team, any given moment will surprise you. And I think we've played every team tough so far. So it's worrisome, but we've gone on a stretch since that loss, on a pretty decent stretch, and which we'll talk about. So
yeah, cool. So like I said before, the final score of that game was 68-39. Loyola dropped that game in Terre Haute against Indiana State. The next game was a few days later at home. It was nice to return home. And we were met with a Valpo team who was healthier than the last time we played them. We won 70-68, kind of in some exciting fashion. Came down to the last play. Pretty hotly contested. I think it was called right. I'm biased. But what ended up happening was Loyola was up by two. I think Valpo had the ball with like 8 or 9 seconds left, like a significant amount of time. Javon Freeman Liberty, most likely first team all Valley, was dribbling down the court. Marquise Kennedy cut him off, made a play on the ball, tipped it loose, and Cam tipped it further down the court. It did look like Kennedy could have initiated contact with him, causing Freeman, I think, to fall or stumble. But I think that they did the right thing in not making that call. Allowed the guys to play, and they didn't decide the game on a whistle. But other than that, Marquise Kennedy did have a fantastic game. He had 15 points, 6 rebounds, and 2 assists, which is just awesome to see him continue to play well, which he's had, you know, his ups and downs, and more ups than downs, it seems, lately. So he was really, I know he carried the team for a bit in the second half with a bunch of scoring. He did have 2 3-pointers. He only missed one shot. He was 6 of 7, which is awesome to see. Unfortunately, it was 1 of 4 from the free throw line, so still things to work on there. Other than that, Cam had 20 points. He had 20 points, 6 rebounds, and 2 assists. And then the only other person in double figures, Tate had 10, and then both Lucas and Keith had 9. Lucas had a pretty full box score, though. He had 9 points, 6 rebounds, 4 assists, 2 steals. I think pretty good games all around. I think in this game, the thing for me that it didn't have to be this close was the fact that we were 9 of 21 from free throw, which is horrible. And I thought we were maybe moving past that, moving past the futility of our free throw attempts. But Lou, what were some things that stood out to you about this game, whether it be Marquise Kennedy's play off the bench, Cam Krutwig having 20, or maybe Valpo making this a big game? What was something for you that stood out?
So this was a game that I was intrigued to see how the defense would respond, and it was a pretty much a high scoring affair. Our defense, not saying they didn't show up, but really no lockdown. Again, as this came into question, so Javon Liberty Freeman up there with player of the name categories, and I think we did pretty well on him. I think out of all the times we play teams with, when they have one like top guy, and right now it's you and I, and it's Valpo as well as our guy Kevin Krobig, but Javon Freeman limited him with 6 for 15, so when he had 5 turnovers, so I think that was a great thing. But he himself is a great defender. He had 4 steals. Yeah. But the thing that really gets me is really kind of the mix of scoring. So you had, like, Marquise Kennedy coming off the bench, second highest scorer on the team with 15. I think that's just amazing. I think, again, he is finding more of a way to get himself involved from off the bench. And I think this is – do I disagree? Do I think he should start? I don't know. I think our freshmen are definitely different than a freshman who goes to Duke. So maybe it's best that we develop them a little bit and then have them go off next year, or maybe go off in his final 2 years, because again, his next year we'll have such a heavy senior class. So just intriguing to watch him grow. But I think for me is the big thing is, it's just overall play, had to be 40% from three, in the first half, and then 37% from three in the second half. And
was that for us or for Valpo?
For us.
Okay.
Sorry. Yeah. So, yeah, so I think that was the interesting thing. Again, no one shot more than 4 threes except for Tate, which Tate, again, I think I go back to, I'm totally fine. Mm-hmm. Lucas went 2 for 4, Marquise went 2 for 3, and Clemens went 1 for 4. And quite honestly, I'm actually fine with Clemens, and this is, again, I'm saying this before I talk about the UNI game. Clemens is not a guy I've seen take many threes, so I don't know if he's comfortable or not comfortable. So until you know that, you got to shoot. So as I know, I'm very, very comfortable with Tate shooting threes, not so comfortable with Lucas shooting threes. And again, it's Marquise Kennedy's finding any way to score, either driving or not. Though again, I think the only thing for me then lastly is just how Valpo plays us. And I think Valpo plays us very hard and consistent till the end. It came down to their possession. It came down to nearly their possession again last time we played them. It just became quiet, though, on our end, I feel, as they kind of went on the run. So we were up 14 at one point with under 8 minutes left, and then they just came back. And I think, quite honestly, that's when you had Javon Freeman Liberty play a lot of hard defense and really get into your face. Yep. So I don't think there's anyone like him in the Valley.
No.
Playing on ball defense like he does. So that is my only concern, is about if we would to see Valpo in the conference play. I think he has another gear defensively, and I think that would be a concern then moving forward, because we were up 14, but then again, as we were able to hold on a little bit toward the end, thanks so much to, I have to say, Marquise Kennedy, just kind of, that's funny, he wasn't afraid. He made me nervous. Like, that reach was one of the most nervous things I think I've watched.
It was a bold play.
All season.
Yeah.
But it was like, the reward was like, wow. So, I think if he was a junior, I'd be like, totally fine with him doing that. Senior, wouldn't question it. Freshman, sophomore, I'm like, oh, buddy, you're still new. But, again, is maybe that's just because we haven't had a freshman like this in quite some time.
Yeah.
I think the last freshman to really be like, whoa, this guy really knows what he's doing, was Milton Doyle. But, yeah. As he came from such this whole Kansas, while Marquise Kennedy, he's showing us that he has his potential.
I think it's a really interesting point you brought up about, whether you're okay with Kennedy doing that play or not. And it makes me think there's a very fine line between a dumb freshman mistake and, a mature play by a young player, you know? And that is the line, is kind of did it work, you know? And he is physically gifted enough to make those plays. And if I remember correctly, I don't think Valpo's in the bonus yet. So even, I'm not positive, but I thought I read that even if he would have fouled him, they still wouldn't have been at the free throw line. Lou's going to check that out. But the other thing that I wanted to talk about is just how well we've done against Freeman Liberty in a whole. How many did we have in the second half?
We were at 6.
Okay. Maybe, I don't know. That does seem like...
Oh, maybe... I got to look at... Maybe one of them was offensive and stuff, so that wouldn't have counted to teams. Okay.
Yeah.
So we'll keep looking into that.
Yeah, I thought that I read it, but I could be wrong. But as a whole, we've done very well against Javon Freeman Liberty. In our two games, he only had 10 the first time we played him at Valpo. He shot 4-12. And then this time out, he had 13, and he was 6-15. So he ended up only making 10 shots out of 27, which is, he's shooting 37% against us. That's fantastic for a guy that is definitely going to be All-Valley this year. Most likely, if he stays in the conference, will be perennial All-Valley for his offense and his defensive prowess. It's just really impressive to see, and that's something we'll continue to talk about when we talk about the UNI game and AJ Green, is our ability to hold those guys to low shooting percentages. So that was one thing for me that really stood out. I think in this game, Freeman Liberty had more help around him. Fasikas was back from injury. He had 13 points. Donovan Clay, who really lit us up the first game with a bunch of threes, wasn't as successful from three, but still had 13 points. So they have more guys now. They're a deeper team with Kaiser and Daniel Sackey coming off the bench. So they have a good rotation of guys. I think for them, it's putting it together in a short amount of time because they have had the injuries pile up. So now that they're healthy, they have to figure it out kind of on the fly. And one thing, this is kind of a different point, but Valpo is one of the four teams tied at 7-7. And of their last four games, they play each of the teams they're tied with at least once. So I think it's very interesting. They could end up, they have the ability to turn their season around the most out of any of the teams that are tied for fifth place then? something like that, fifth.
Yeah, kind of the meat, yeah.
But it was a good game. It was lots of fun. It was cool to see all the guys get hyped up at the end when Kennedy made the steal and Cam backed him up. And Cam was all fired up. And
yeah, very fired up, yeah.
It's definitely like an image of an important game in the season. Sometimes you get those plays, those images, those moments. And that was definitely one of them with the Kennedy play at the end. So, yeah, that was a fun one. Lou, what are your last thoughts on that game?
My last thoughts are really just it was a game we needed to win to respond. And we just kind of let Valpo creep the way back, but we didn't stop us from getting the ultimate goal of win.
Cool. Yeah, I think we're going to take a little break here. We're still going to talk about the two games from this previous week. And then we might talk a little bit about just some initial thoughts on Arch Madness because it's coming up right around the corner. So stay with us and don't forget, go Blurs.
And the Ramblers are moving on!
And we're back. So the first game of this past week was against Evansville. We went to Evansville and won 73-66. It was a different game for us. We got out to a big hot start. We were hitting from everywhere. Tate had threes, Keith had threes, Lucas had threes. Like it was a really good, really great fast start for us. And then towards the end of the first half, we kind of let them back in. I think we were only up by like less than 10 going into halftime. We were up 11 going into halftime. And then with like 6.5 minutes left, Evansville took the lead. They were up one. And also around this time, you were saying that Cam was shooting free throws, right? And that's when there's a time with like 7 or 8 minutes left. Cam was shooting free throws after he had just gotten hurt.
Yeah, so Cam got fouled. And for those who remember, he kind of like stepped awkwardly down. And it was kind of an interesting moment just because it didn't look like he didn't land on anyone's foot or anything, but he also didn't have the best landing. So he took the free throws, but missed.
Yeah, it was an and one, I think. He made a basket with 6:52 left to put them up 59-57 and had one free throw, and he missed it.
Yeah, but then the thing is, he missed it, and the ref immediately calls a timeout saying for injury to sub out Cameron Krutwig, which, as a fan, if that happened against me, I totally agree with them. That, like, yo, that's a lot of, it's kind of BS. Like, he was able to take the shot. Funny enough, though, on the next possession, they turn over the ball as well. So, kind of just a way of things going connecting.
Well, so the reason why that fans were upset from Evansville was because he misses the free throw. It's a live ball. And so, I don't think that I know of, I can't think of another time where a referee would call a timeout during a live ball to allow a substitution. Like, if it happens, it doesn't happen often. And so that allowed Loyola really to have an advantage of being able to sub him out. So that's where the confusion lies and what Lou was saying about how you would be upset too if it happened to you.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so then shortly after that, like Lou said, they turned over the ball. We had the opportunity to score. Tate misses two free throws in a row. And then Evansville took the lead with 6 minutes left, or 5.5 minutes left, 60-59. And then for me, so after Cam got hurt, he was out the rest of the game, the last 7 minutes. So then for me, I was so curious as to see, like, how did they win? Because they haven't had to do that yet. Like, they haven't had to win without Cam. Cam's played in every game. He plays down the stretch. He plays 35 minutes a game, roughly. And so they had at that point, they when Cam came out, they were only up two. So they had to really stick it through. And what ended up happening was Lucas decided to make his free throws. Keith had a really clutch and one layup. He also made his free throws. And they played some good defense and didn't allow Evansville to really get back in it at all. So, props to those guys who played the last seven. It was probably the four starters besides Cam and then Marquise would be my guess. Interesting lineup to see, especially with Ahir playing as the five man, which we have thought for some time could be a somewhat useful lineup if the other team isn't using another big man. But Lou, what was your takeaway from this game? Because I know they had the big lead, then they gave it up. So do you think this is another thing where we kind of collapsed, or how do you look at this game?
I don't think it was a collapse. I think it was more of a hesitation. And I think this is where I wanted what Indiana State did to us to transfer to this game. We were up 22 points at that point, and we somehow let them back. Mm-hmm. And not saying I didn't think we weren't going to win, but the game before, the biggest game probably of the conference play was this game. And I was expecting to be a little bit more tougher as a team, a little bit stronger to the basket. And there was just a confusion of what this team was doing, I think, toward the end. And mainly it was just that the fact that we put up 45 points in the first half and they put up 34. So it was a really high scoring affair. But the thing is, in our second half, they outscored us. They scored 32, we scored 28. And it was just really how we responded. We took this such a huge, large lead. And it was like, what are we going to do with it? And really, we didn't push it. And again, as our defense necessarily was there, we were kind of keeping them. Again, it's this kind of interesting back-to-back games where high-scoring offenses that we allow to happen. So that's the one concern I'm seeing. But our offense just wasn't really there in the second half. We nearly scored 20 less points in the second half than we did in the first half. So I think that's the thing. And like you mentioned, though, Cameron Krobig stopped playing. Mm-hmm. He stopped playing, and he played a total of 25 minutes, but he stopped playing with easily 7-6 minutes left, we'll say, right?
Yep, yep.
So that's a potential for him to play 31 minutes, and he stopped playing, and he was at
the most important time of the whole game. You're up to with 6 minutes left. Like, that's crunch time.
Yeah, and that's the thing is, though, this team needs to prepare for moments like that, because what do you do when your best player goes down? We can't expect, what if it happens at Arch Madness when Cameron Krobig goes down? So yeah, we probably got Marquise Kennedy coming in, and we're playing small, but where's Frank? Tom Welch.
I think they played to the lineup that Evansville is using too. Evansville doesn't really have a big guy.
No.
So I think in a different situation, if we're playing like Bradley or you and I, who both have a big man, like Frank is for sure getting those minutes.
Yeah, so like it was just interesting. I think the only thing when looking at the other team's box score for me is I know going into the Sam Cunliffe transfer from Kansas, who quite honestly I thought would be a little bit more deadly, I guess, in the Valley.
Yeah.
The kid just shoots whenever he wants, and I'm really
confused.
He doesn't
care where he is.
We've talked about this all season. We've looked at his box score. He was only 6 for 12 from field goals, so not terrible. Like, that's 50%. That's decent. 3 for 6 from 3. But just, like, he just shoots, and it's crazy. But KJ Riley really went off, and quite honestly, we've seen this from an Evansville player. They had, what, Drew Smith a few years ago?
Yeah.
So they've had players that can really score, but they just lose them. And I don't know if KJ Riley, I don't know if it was years left or whatever. But
he's a junior.
The kid did have 28 points. 12 of those points came from the free throw line.
Yeah.
And he was 12 for 15, so he was really going there. But toward the end, Evansville was just like doing these weird passes that were just, they were getting turnovers toward the end. And I think, quite honestly, he had 6 turnovers. I'd love to know how many of those turnovers came in the second half or even in the last minutes. We don't have a second half box score right now. But that was just intriguing to me, is watching that end. KJ Riley still scored, but it was just a weird offense to watch Evansville produce. And our defense really didn't frighten away, but our offense just wasn't producing. So I think that's what was able, that we were handed such in kind of a lopsided offense from Evansville that we were able to respond defensively. Yeah. So I don't know. The game was a W, so that's what we got to count. It might have been, and quite honestly, I'm going to call it an ugly win.
Fair.
It wasn't a pretty win. We were up 22, and then they come back and take a lead. So that's where I get concerned. And it was the game before you and I, so I was frustrated just with, like, what are these guys doing this week?
So I think we're kind of burying the lead here. Lucas Williamson had 20 points. Like, that's a huge step for him offensively, especially in a game where Cam goes down. He scored, I think he had, like, 6 points in the last 6 minutes, all from the free throw line, if I'm not mistaken. He 2 for 5 from 3, 6 of 11. Really nice to see him take it to the hoop more. Also had 5 rebounds, an assist, and 2 steals. I think this is the type of game where, like, we're hoping that we saw this more often from him this year. But now we've seen it a couple times where he's put up really good offensive numbers. It's nice to see he can do it. I think for me is like, and my expectations for him have gone way down from the beginning of the year, but for him just to see him do it makes me confident that maybe one game in Arch Madness we can hope to see him do, if we're playing three or four games in Arch Madness, that he can put up 18, 20, 22 in one of those games. That made me really happy to see. I really enjoyed Keith Clemens had a big shot coming down. He didn't shoot the best this game, but did have a really big layup and one towards the end of the game. He had 2 3-pointers, played 31 minutes. Nice to see him get some good run time. And then the other thing, Marquise Kennedy, we like to talk about the bench. He had 7 points. He fouled out of the game, which is actually kind of interesting. We don't usually have players foul out, but Marquise had 7, which is good. It's not great, but it's a good addition from the bench. If this is his down game, like we've been talking, we want to see him be more consistent. He was coming off a game where he had 15. He scored 7 this game. That's better than some of his off games in the past where he's scored none or 2 or 1 or whatever. But for me, I think I was really, really happy and pleased to see Lucas play as good of a game offensively as he has so far this year. So that was really cool for me to see. But like you mentioned, Lou, we did let KJ Riley score 28 points. And he got to the free throw line 15 times, which is like, that's a lot. I know that Evansville is pretty good at getting to the free throw line from what I've read. But I don't know. It's too much. Can't let that happen. If we play him in Arch Madness, for whatever reason, that's one way I could see us being in trouble, is if we get in foul trouble and they're hitting everything from the free throw line, and on the flip side, maybe we don't make stuff from the free throw line. But yeah, I don't know, Lou. What were you thinking after this game? Like going in from after the Evansville game.
So we didn't know what Cameron's kind of injury or thing was going to be.
There was
so
nothing.
And it was just going to be. And quite honestly, I don't think it didn't look bad. It could have been. So that's the thing. For me, he didn't land on anyone's foot awkwardly. I think it was just like the contestant that he went up.
Mm-hmm.
So that was my thing. It wasn't like a bad landing, but I think it definitely was pressure. So I was concerned.
With a big guy like that,
exactly.
A little
Let's
tweak
be honest.
Can be
when the center brings the gravity, all everything down.
Yeah, he's a big boy.
But the thing is, it's like, come on, guys. Like, Tate went 4 for 10 from field goal.
It's not great.
Not great. And, like, yeah, Lucas went off, and that's great. But, like, again, it was against Evansville.
Yeah.
This is where I kind of expected. Evansville has lost every single conference game.
But we've talked about how important road games, or how difficult they are to win.
Yes, but I think, quite honestly, this is way different. This is the bottom tier of our conference play. And if this is how we play our bottom tier, like Indiana State is actually up there. Like Indiana State has won games against conference teams, including us. But
same with Drake.
Evansville has not won a game. SIU beat you and I.
Yeah.
They beat us, so that you can't be really upset with those games.
Don't get me wrong. This isn't how I expected this game to go, but I think any road win, especially this time of year in the Valley, is a big deal. So I'm not pleased, but I was satisfied, I guess, if there's a difference there.
No, there is. And, like, the thing is, like, Indiana State only lost by 8 to Northern Iowa. They beat SIU.
Yep.
And so, like, they have a great... So, for us to play Evansville like this,
yeah,
this is where it got me concerned. So
okay, that's fair. Going into the
The UNI most important game. Let's all be honest. This was the game that led up to the UNI game. You kind of hoped... It wasn't going to be a tune-up game, but you kind of expected, like, hey, put all your energy out there, dominate, and then rest.
Yeah.
But it really wasn't. It was like, hey, are we going to pull this out? Are we letting them creep back? And we did, and then we finally pulled it out, and it was tough kind of to watch to the end.
Yeah, that's true. Yep. All right, well, that does the Evansville wrap-up. We won the game 73-66, and after that game, we were concerned about Cam Crutwig's status going into the Northern Iowa game, which, if you all remember, the first game against Northern Iowa at their place was a very fun, interesting, difficult, challenging game that went into overtime. We fought back, we tied it, went to OT, and then they dominated the overtime period. This is the opposite of that game. Loyola was up, going, I think they were up like 7 with 4 minutes left or something. UNI fought back, made a couple wild threes, and then I think the most, the biggest play of the game has to be AJ Green hitting a step back three over the outstretched arms of Ahir Ugwak with 3 seconds left in the game to send it to overtime, effectively. Do we want to talk about that play really quick, get that out of the way, since it was the biggest moment?
Yeah, I think the only thing before that would be how we had such a big lead, kind of let that go. Granted, it's you and I. They're a great scoring offensive team. You keep reminding me they're fourth, third in the country in 3 points.
Yeah, before this game, they were top 10.
Yeah, they were top 10. So I'm a little disappointed about how we handled it, but this would be exactly the most... There was this big moment of the game, and for those of you who don't remember, it was a few seconds left. You and I was coming down three. There were commentators were like, oh, dude, is the Loyola foul? Do they do this?
And everyone knew AJ Green was going to have the ball.
And that's the thing. AJ Green was going to have the ball, and we fouled a few because we were able to like let clock run and stop because we had a few left. And we had an Ahir Ugwak on the guy. And you know what? I'm not upset with how Ahir Ugwak played. I will argue with anyone, if you disagree with me, how Ahir Ugwak played defense on AJ Green. Ahir Ugwak, I don't care if anyone said he should have blocked it. He made this shot so difficult that AJ Green was fading away into the out of bounds, into the front row seats right there. And I watched his hands. He had to heave the ball over Ahir Ugwak's hand.
It wasn't a normal shot.
Wasn't his normal shot. And he was able to put it up. And the thing is, AJ Green, I think, nearly closed his eyes. Because that thing was...
He shot and prayed.
He had to. I don't know what Panther in you and I you pray for. I don't even know there's Panthers in
Northern
Ireland.
They must have,
Ireland.
Like, Sister Claw over
they,
there.
They have to,
Sister
because...
Teeth.
Either the Panther grabbed the ball and put it in the net, because that shot was just great. And the thing
yeah,
is,
I mean,
though,
props to him.
My thing is, like, you're like, that's AJ Green. There you go. Yeah. Congrats, AJ Green. And Ahir Ugwak, God bless you, man. That defense was... fantastic, I thought. You played him on the ball, and he didn't do a stupid foul. What if he fouled him and he made the shot? How many people would be... He was like, I'm just going to play up against him. We don't know what he was thinking, but it looked like he was like, I'm going to play as much as I can, but I'm not going to foul him. I can't foul him, because that if he hits his shot and makes an and one and we lose, it'd be the end of it all.
I don't even want to think about it. Makes me sick. But actually, another interesting thing was after the game, they asked Porter about it, and Porter said there was a miscommunication, that he wanted to foul. They I don't remember if it was a Phoenix or if someone asked, like who asked him, but he said there was a miscommunication. So that's the part that worries me the most, is like, you need to know what we're doing. And I don't know if that...
I'm intrigued to see who was supposed to take lead.
I think
Cam supposed to tell the guy? Like,
no, it should be Porter. Porter should, in my opinion, Porter should be the one that's nailing it down in everyone's head. Foul, foul, foul. And if he didn't make that point extremely clear, I mean, obviously it could have been, maybe Ugwak was trying to foul before that. I don't know. It didn't look like that. But either way, I'm glad he didn't foul. I think my concern is Porter needs to get that message in his player's head. Like, he needs to do a better job of communicating, if that's the case. And if I remember correctly, in the statement, he did take responsibility for it. But just to follow up, Northern Iowa right now is the second best 3-point percent shooting team in the country.
In the country?
41.29. This is according to Haslametrics. And they're actually, I wouldn't have guessed this, but they're the number one mid-range jumper shooting team. They have that stat. I've never really seen that stat. They have a lot of in-depth stats. But their mid-range percentage is 46.1. That's best in the country. They have, as of right now, Northern Iowa has the 19th most efficient offense in the country, as according to Haslametrics. But yeah, I mean, that moment was cool. I guess it made me want to vomit. I'll tell the story. I was flying home from Phoenix, and I was in the airport bar, and I'd been sitting there camped out for a little bit because my flight was delayed. And I'm watching the game, and I noticed the bartenders are all kind of cleaning up. And so there's probably like 4 or 5 minutes left in the game, and I was like, oh, I'll leave if you want me to. Like, you can, you know, tell me when you need me to leave. And they're like, and the bartender was super nice, and she was like, oh, no, don't worry about it. Like, you can stay here until we put the bar stools up. Like, don't worry about it. And I was like, oh, quit. Okay, cool. That's really nice. And it went 10, 15 minutes beyond 7:30. And she comes over to me, and she's like, oh, we're going to need you to leave in, like, 5 minutes. And I was like, cool, there's 15 seconds left in the game. Don't worry about it. I'll be gone by then. And then, sure enough, AJ Green hits the shot, sends it to OT. But I didn't want to stay any longer, so I ended up leaving and trying to find another bar. And by the time I found another bar, Loyola's up by 7 in overtime, and there was no stress or very little stress. But I did then miss the whole moment with AJ Green diving on the floor, running into Lucas's knee or shoe or whatever, and then breaking his nose, which they came out later after the game and said he did break his nose, in fact. I kind of wonder if he got a concussion, actually. It looked pretty bad. But
there was no way the kid was not playing.
Yeah, I mean, they would have had to physically drag him off the floor. Would have had to have been there. They would have tried to stop the bleeding, and even then.
Well, he did. There were so many. Again, I don't know if you saw when you said.
Yeah.
But watching the game, there were so many. Like, he had a whole bunch of tissues and everything. He was really trying to stop everything.
I'm surprised.
And granted, it was tough because.
It was gruesome. It was kind of gross.
Doing well at that point for the team.
No.
And it didn't look well. So.
He probably should have come out. It probably would have done him better.
That's why it's so interesting is this is the exact flip of what happened at UNI. They only scored 2 points in all of OT. We only scored 4 in all of OT.
Oh, really?
We went on a drought at their place. They went on a drought and now at our place. And we just dominated and they dominated. So it's really interesting to see the
flip
of a coin.
Evenly matched teams, I think.
Up there, yeah.
But yeah, the OT was great. Keith had another shot. I'm so sorry that we waited this long to talk about Keith Clemens, but dang,
oh, yeah,
man.
Keith Clemens. I think we were just more intrigued by the AJ Green
shot. That was
shot.
The moment, yeah.
But let's be honest. So let's get into it. We'll finish with highlights then of our guys. But besides, I'm going to give it to you quite honestly. What a defensive moment there. Happy with that.
Yep.
But let's move on to guys who really, really shined. And one of the guys we're talking about how we think he got snubbed. And a certain cat. Well, actually, we think both got snubbed. But here we go. Keith Clemens, most points on the whole team. 25 points. 1 turnover, so great, I think, overall.
Oh, wow, yeah.
The guy played 44 minutes.
What a warrior.
He was a warrior, and he was 5-for-8 from 3. So just like I said previously, don't see him shooting much. 5-for-8.
Yeah.
I'm not expecting him to be the sniper, but there was one shot there at the end there where he got the ball switched to him really quick, and he just without
in
hesitant.
Regulation or in
regulation?
Yeah, in the
without
corner.
No, it was top.
Oh,
yeah,
yeah,
wing.
Little,
it was on the wing.
Yep.
Yeah, and without hesitation, just went right into shooting motion. But it was great movement on the ball. Cameron Krewick only played 33 minutes, so actually the
he had
fourth most minutes, so he didn't even play them up. But the kid had I don't even care about the minutes. Was 10-for-19 field goal, 11 rebounds, and 21 points. That double-double.
20 and 10.
Cameron Krewick. We're just going to say it now. Totally got snubbed for player of the week.
Yeah, it's
gonna,
garbage.
Absolutely say that. Especially in a game against you and I. You have to say that was a game.
So ridiculous.
But Tate Hall, 40 minutes, 11 points. Kid was 2-for-4 from 3, 4-for-8. But then Marquise Kennedy as well. Only played 22 minutes. But a great bench guy to have. 5-for-10 from field goal. So, again, 50%, which is not bad. It's
that's
just like
the borderline. Like, you did okay. You did
yeah,
good.
You did okay. It just maybe, for me, with Marquise Kennedy, it's like maybe better selection. Maybe instead of 5-for-10, you're 5-for-8. Like, just being a little bit smart. And, again, he had 1 assist. Again, 2 personal fouls, so he likes to get around there. But he had 2 steals. Most tied for the most steals of the day for the team. So, that was great. But the only other bench points were Frank with 2 points. So that
and
was
he
really...
actually, it was a really important shot. It was a beautiful hook shot. And I think it was when he came in late in the second half.
Yeah, and that's the thing. He only played 10 minutes, but like...
Oh, and he had a heck of a block.
He did have a block,
Swatted the heck out of, I don't know who. It might have been Green, honestly, or Burhau or whatever.
Well, then that's a great segue to just talk about not only... So yeah, Green had the 19 points. But this is the second game we've played, you and AJ Green had 7 turnovers. If I remember correctly, he had about 6 last game.
Yeah, I'll look it up. Keep going.
And our defense against AJ Green, I think, has just been spectacular.
Yeah.
If it was a here, I don't know who, but AJ Green was 8-for-23 from field goal.
Jeez.
8-for-23. And granted, it's a little different when you ask AJ Green to score.
That's nearly 33%.
Yeah, it's just above, I think. Yeah, just 34. Above. But then he was 3-for-11 from 3-point. Yeah. But again, is that one three, that last third one was the one that sent it OT.
AJ had 7 turnovers in the first game against
us. And he had 7 again.
Yeah.
So that just shows you what great defense we can, again, is Kimmins didn't go off, which was crazy because Kimmins only played 3 minutes today.
Kimmins had 13 against us last time.
And he had only 3 minutes the whole entire game for 2 points. So this game, I think we really focused on how to properly lock down defense. And that was my thing that was really intriguing. But again, as Adrian will find a way to score regardless of what he's doing. I think he's what I thought Sam Cunliffe would be a little bit. A guy who's going to do whatever he can because he's going to score. But AJ Green is another level than anyone else in the Valley, I think, at a certain point when he is able to do whatever he wants for a team and still produces, even though he might have a few obstacles like turnovers and going for 3-for-11 from three, but still bringing the team close and having such a great record like they do.
Yeah, it was a really fun one to watch. And it is true. I love seeing how great of defense we played on AJ Green. We talked earlier about how we played well against Javon Freeman Liberty. And when they lock in, they can stop anyone. They really can, and they need to just continue having that energy throughout the rest of the season. Even when we're going up against Illinois State this week or Missouri State next, the end of this week, they each of those teams have really skilled guys that can go off for 20-25 points a game. So we need to make sure to keep that energy even when it's not the big names, like the big guys that we know are gonna score well. But yeah, I think the only thing I would mention that I would love to see him do a little bit better, I thought Tate was a little quiet. He had a couple really nice threes, which is great to see. But I would have loved to see him do a little bit more. I guess now looking at it, though, he had 5 rebounds and 6 assists. So although he wasn't scoring at the same clip, we know he can, still had a productive game. Lucas had 8 points, but he also had 4 rebounds, 4 assists, 4 steals, 2 blocks. Like, dude was everywhere for us, for Loyola. 0 for 4 from 3, though, so that won't do you any favors, Lou. But,
no, but the thing is...
Also, free throws, what the heck, man?
So that's the thing, is, but he did so much, so it's so tough. And again, as in a W, we kind of gloss over the box score. And I don't want to drill down because there are so many things that a box score doesn't show.
And actually, some of those free throws are in overtime. I know all of Cam's missed free throws are in overtime. Yeah, and it didn't really matter.
Yeah, and it didn't matter because we got the W. But the thing is, this is for when we play you and I again, hopefully in the conference tournament. Or maybe they get upset and we don't play them and we can play an easier team. But I don't know. The Valley is always, like, we were talking and maybe let's just end. I'm still nervous for the rest of the schedule because we have Bradley with Elijah Child. Yep. We have Missouri State, which we only won by 4. So we have Drake again. We have Illinois State shouldn't be that tough, but let's be honest, we got crushed by Indiana State. So we don't know. But games like this, I'm not going to deny that, there were some faults. It just, there are little things that you got like, hey, make sure you don't forget about this thing. Make sure
this team isn't perfect.
Yeah, and exactly. Very much, but the thing is, they were able to take what they did and put it together and put on what a spectacular game.
Yeah.
Not only did we go to overtime, but being on a ESPN2, getting the crowd, sold out crowd. It was great to see.
Robbie Gold was there.
Robbie Gold was there. Yeah. So I know him.
I'm sure there was probably some other bigger names with the NBA All-Star Week. I would guess someone was probably there.
Yeah, I know it just was tough. I know I saw a few tweets from guys trying to get some people to come up to the game. But with NBA All-Star Weekend, it was kind of tough to get the big names, but it was a great game to see.
Oh, yeah. Cam was trying to get... Who was he trying to get?
He was trying to get Barstool's Big Cat to come up to the game because he was in town for the weekend, for the All-Star Weekend.
But ever since Cam put up 21-11, Big Cat's been real quiet. He needs to... What? He has 24 hours to respond.
24 hours to respond.
Yeah.
But, so here's the thing. Yeah, I think this game was a great game to see the overall effort. It's so frustrating because this team can play at such a high level.
And this was the game where they can still play better.
But it's like, imagine they play like this all the time, but then we know they can't, and we know away atmospheres have been so different for us, and it's a young team, and a lot of these guys who are playing haven't played at Division I level before.
Yeah.
This is Tate's first time. This is Keith's first time. This is Pipkins.
Kennedy.
Marquise. So, like, these are guys' first times in, like, D1 atmospheres.
There's really three rotation guys that have played a D1 basketball, like, consistently.
Yeah, it's Cam, Ugoc, and Lucas. Yeah. And that's the thing is, like, I'm not so, maybe it's the environment, but this team has such great potential. I think Saturday's game showed that, and it really excites me for what we got for the rest of the season and for Arch Madness.
Yep. Well, so after this game, one of the cool things was it Andy Katz? Who's the one that puts out their top 36 or whatever? Who is it? I'll look it up. But
Andy Katz put up the top 36.
And he had Loyola as 35th. Is that true?
Yeah, so Andy Katz came out with his top 36 predictions, and he had Loyola at, or his power 36.
Yeah,
which power 36. He had Loyola at 35, you and I at 36. Again, I wouldn't say we're not the 35th team in the country. That's not what it means. It's just
kind of recent games.
It's recent games and impacts of what that game meant is. And he had Loyola at 35, and you and I, of course, at 36. Granted, his little snippets about each team wasn't really great.
Pretty much identical.
He said for Loyola comes off a great win against top-ranked team, University of Northern Iowa, a great win in overtime. And then you and I at 36, he said, you and I comes off a tough loss against the Loyola Ramblers in overtime.
He must have been really tired.
Similar storyline, just again flipped. But the thing is, this just shows maybe we're getting some attention from people. Speaking of attention, you and I still had received votes today in the top 25. They received 4 votes, even after a loss to us. So I put this up as a quality win for us. It was great to see, and it was just a great kind of atmosphere.
And one of my favorite ranking sites, Bart Torvik, who I've talked about before on the podcast, he has his own rankings, and he has what he would seed the teams at right now in March Madness if the season ended. And he actually has Northern Iowa comfortably in. He has them as a 7 seed, which is the highest I've seen. I've seen 7, 9, 10, lots of 9s and 10s. Which 9 and 10 is still even roughly comfortably in. Once you start getting to 11, that's where, if you're seated as an 11, that you could end up missing out because of the amount of automatic bids that multiple conferences get. But if they're at a 7, I mean, they're with some big team names there, with Michigan, Oklahoma has been good, BYU's been really good, ahead of teams like Arizona, USC, ahead of Wichita State. Had at Arizona State, St. Mary's, Rutgers. I mean, like, they're up there. So, it's cool to see that Northern Iowa's getting recognition. The conference as a whole is getting recognition. And it also leads me to believe that, it's very possible that the Valley could get 2 bids into March Madness, which would be super fun. It would end up having to be probably Northern Iowa making it all the way to the championship. And then losing to whoever, hopefully us, in the championship. And that would be the way that the Valley could get 2 teams into March Madness. That kind of wraps up the news portion as far as, like, how it went after we beat Northern Iowa. I'm honestly a little surprised. I haven't seen a ton of, like, usually The Athletic has a couple different articles just about mid-major basketball, and then also this was, like, one of their games to watch for the week. I'm kind of surprised there hasn't been any
response to it yet.
Yeah, I mean, still early. Maybe they'll do it tonight. We're recording this on Monday, so maybe they'll do it later tonight or tomorrow. But if they keep winning, that's all that matters. And we'll get the recognition if we deserve it. So
maybe just give some recognition to Cameron Krutwick, please.
Yeah, Cam, man.
Or Keith Clemens.
This is the way we're going to end it. Well, let's rant about how the heck Cam and Keith were not either player of the week or newcomer of the week, because that's some hot garbage. Cameron Krutwig put up 14-8 against Evansville, then went on to put on 21-11. I don't even know how many assists he had. That's just points and rebounds. He also had a bunch of steals and blocks. I mean, a road win at Evansville. Evansville's obviously in last place, but then beating the first place team in overtime on national television, in which, like, everyone's talking about how great of a season Cam's having. It's just, they gave it to Javon Freeman Liberty, who, although Valpo won both games, I think he only averaged, like, 18 points over this past week, where Cam was close. I mean, Cam was average, I think it was, like, 17 or something like that, 17.5. It's just, like, seriously makes me so upset that I don't understand what Cam has to do in order to win a player of the week. He's won one, but beating the best team in the conference is...
Yeah, I really thought beating the best team in the conference would have kind of edge. And he had great games. Yeah. He still had 20 and he had a double-double. He still had great outings. So we're not like we're joking that he didn't, but it's just kind of confusing to be like, what else does the kid have to do to really show that he's not messing around?
Yeah. And then you go from that to Keith Clemens. He had 12 against Evansville and then had 25 against Northern Iowa. And in my opinion, was the major reason why they won this ball game scoring-wise. And they end up giving it to Lamont West from Missouri State, who it did have, like, I think he averaged, like, 17 points and 8 rebounds or something. He had a good rebound total where Keith wasn't really... He didn't do all that much besides, like, stats-wise, besides score, although he was playing great defense and had some steals. But again, it's just like, okay, in my opinion, in my head, I was thinking one of them will win. There's no way that they don't reward a team for winning both games, beating the team in first place on national television, in which these guys put up crazy stat lines, and they both had pretty good first games in the week, too. It just, it's so wild to me that they, I don't think it's biased or anything. Like, I'm not trying to say that they have it out for us or anything. But it just seems very weird this year that we haven't gotten rewarded more for, similar performances. I think the only time Cam won was when he had the triple double.
Yeah.
But we've seen him have really good performances besides that. Yeah, I don't know. It's, kind of messed up in my opinion. Keith should have won it. And so should have Cam. But I guess that's not how the cookie crumbled. But I'm sure the guys would rather have the two wins than a player of the week.
Not. Yeah, no, they've said that before, and I think right now the goal is strictly, let's be honest, it's how to set us up for the best situation for Arch Madness.
Yep. Maybe next week we'll talk a little bit more about, like, who we're afraid of. Who besides Northern Iowa scares you most going into Arch Madness?
I'd say if we finish the season today... If we finish the season today, I think maybe SIU because we lost them and because I think they might travel well, being that they're not far at all from St. Louis.
Yeah.
My only other thing would be Elijah Child, how he's going to respond. But Elijah Child, how he responds when coming back from injury.
My one, if I'm a little off the board, but Valpo, I think for me, with someone as talented as Freeman Liberty, they've played us really tough. And they're getting a little deeper with guys back from injury, but we'll talk about that more next week. It'll be a fun thing to do. All right. Thank you all for listening. It's been a long one. We had a lot to cover. Thank you for continuing to listen despite the week off. I don't think we'll have that same problem going forward throughout the end of the year. Have some fun things that we're planning even after the season happens, some fun recaps, and some silly things too. So make sure to stick with us. If you have any ideas or if you have any thoughts on the podcast as a whole or questions, please don't be afraid to reach out to us. You can find us on Twitter. You know we're active on there. So yeah, just hit us up. But thank you all for listening. And don't forget, go Blurs.